back on the Rule of Three. Two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each. The perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. Later in the show, we're going to be talking about the passing of probably one of the greatest cult leaders of all time, who passed away last night.
Depends on how you term, you know, how you define great. You know what I mean?
Also, we're going to be talking about the ban on elephant parts.
Absolutely.
Later in the show. But right now, over on the other side, the chuckle, the voice you hear, from Washington, D.C., Bent Washburn is with the show today.
Hi, and, Tim.
Hey, good morning to you.
Yeah, it's a good morning here. Leaf blowers are out in force. Yes.
I can't afford the leaf blowers.
Oh yeah.
It's the self operating.
I can't either. I can't.
I've actually got a leaf blower I inherited from my dad, and my dad passed away 20 years ago. So that means my leaf blower is 25 years old. But I'm guessing your leaf blowers are 25 years old as
Maybe, or younger. I'm not sure. They had, you know what? I didn't ask to see any documents, but I will say that I can't afford them either. My wife can afford them. I cannot afford the leaf blowers, the crew. That's not in a comics paycheck, is a crew of leaf blowers.
No, that's I do that myself. I've often thought of sitting at Home Depot in the morning to see if I get picked up.
Oh yeah, yeah, comics think of that. I got an open weekend. I'll go stand over there.
That is true.
That's the kind of dreams you dream as a comic. Man, that'd be amazing to be able to afford.
How the heck am I going to pay the credit card bill this month?
That's right.
What are those guys doing at the Home Depot parking lot?
They're paying credit card bills.
The one that I'm always considering is Uber. And the only thing, by the grace of a too old car, I've been spared from Uber and Lyft.
Mine was too small. The grace of a too small car. I actually applied, did the whole thing, and got the Uber, the little sticker from my license plate. I was going to drive to Uber on the side in my little Ford Fiesta, which is Spanish for party. And I was going to drive my little red Spanish party around. And then my wife said, you'll get killed. You'll get someone else killed. You can't do that. So, yeah. Not enough room, too.
So, for those of you who don't remember, Bent is a friend of the show, a longtime friend of the show.
Yes.
We shared a pair of earbuds once.
Yes, we did. I forgot about that.
On the show. Bent has been doing stand-up, I believe, now 20 years now for
24
you?
Years.
Wow.
22 for, well, not 22 for a living, about 10 for a living, 22 mm-hmm. On the road and 24 total. Yeah,
if you can call this living.
Yeah, yes, I'm breathing. You know what I mean? I'm breathing. I own my own plumbing fixtures. Well, my wife owns most of everything. We got to be honest.
Yeah, let's be honest.
She hired the leaf blowers.
I think it's Walter Williams that often says this. How can anyone be making a living wage and not be making a living wage and still be living? He goes, that just seems like a contradiction to me.
Because it is. Or it's how we define living, I guess, you know? I guess so.
Yeah, it was actually not a living wage. It's a good living wage.
It's a decent living wage. Yeah. I don't know. In D.C. area? What's the living wage now? I don't even know what they say.
Oh, in the D.C. area, living wage has to be around 100 grand.
It's wicked. Year. If you're right in D.C., if you want a house, a shelter, even the basic, the foundation, and what's it called, Laszlo's Pyramid, just to meet the food and shelter one, I'd say at least 80 grand, at least.
Wow.
Right in D.C. area. But you can live in the outskirts for 50, probably.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I thought I was going to go somewhere there.
No. It's probably because I brought up Laszlo's Pyramid. You're trying to picture that in my head now. What are all the sections? And
So it's comfort at the bottom. Is that?
That's where. So I live in the D.C., but I'm not from here. And we're not in D.C. We're in Virginia, over the river.
Where are you from, Bent? Because I think that's going to be important in the future, moving forward.
I am from Utah, originally, a little town in Utah. 1,500 people when I was a kid. Farmland, factory workers. That's what it was.
Wow. Were you on Anchorage? Were you on a farm?
Well, my dad was a psychiatrist. He was the only one in the whole town, or as the town called him, a quack. Total. He's crazier than the people he sees. That's what they thought.
It often seems that way.
Oh, it often is that way.
Sometimes I think a lot of people get degrees in psychology because they're too embarrassed to go to anyone.
they figure they'll fix themselves.
Exactly. They get psychology degrees for the same reason why I change my own oil.
Yeah. Well,
you don't want to have to. For myself, I don't want to have to go to another guy and say I don't know how to change my
oil. It's just too personal. Them getting under your. My dad, though, is a psychiatrist, so he's a medical doctor, and so and in the '60s, and grew up Mormon. And when you think of, if you know a lot about Mormon theology and religion in general in the '60s, and psychology and psychiatry, it's kind of an interesting whole mix of things going on. But he was not, you know, he didn't like Freud. He does not like Freud. He thought all the psychologists were nuts. They were crazy. Because in psychiatry in the '60s, there was a big argument about whether it was nature or nurture when it comes to mental illness, and he was on the nature side.
Sure.
Yeah. So.
Sure.
That's stuff we don't need to
still,
know.
It's still, I still think that debate's going on. And as far as myself, I'm not sure if I've mentioned this before, as far as the nature versus nurture argument.
Yeah.
I was adopted.
Yeah. No, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And grew up on the other side of Detroit from my biological family. My biological dad married my biological mom, and I have five biological sisters. So I am a great control experiment on the nature versus nurture.
Absolutely, yeah.
And my dad, my biological dad, was a stand-up comic.
Yeah, it's crazy. I remember
also county chair of the Libertarian Party.
So, wow. There you go. The demented fruit does not fall far from the demented tree.
Did not, yeah, and it's stuff. Stuff happens all the time. The family I was raised with. One of my favorite jokes was to when my parents would be driving up, would be to hide in the closet, the coat closet. So when they open the door to put their coat away, I'd be there and say, "Can I take your coat?" And always good for a laugh.
Always.
And mom would say, "I don't know where you get that." Well, one of my sisters came to visit, and we're sitting around, we're having coffee, and my wife drives up and pulls up in the drive, and she goes, "Is that your wife?" I go, "Yeah." She goes, "Let's hide."
That's fascinating.
And so I finally got the answer to my mom's question.
It's nature. It's nature.
I say nature.
Yeah.
I say crazy begets crazy.
Well, to me, like that, the nature-nurture argument is, like you said, it's gone back and forth, but they constantly tease out, they try to separate the two, but of course, it's a mixture of both, always.
Well, I think sociology is predicated on the belief that it's all nurture.
You know what? I think a lot of sociology is predicated on that as well. I also think sociology is a very, very soft soft science. I think for a while, pretty soft in the head. That's how
if
I think about it.
If science were pudding, it would be a milkshake.
Oh, you're giving it way too much viscosity, Tim. I really think that stuff is philosophy. That and anthropology were philosophy. And, yeah, they're not sciences that much. They're interesting. I love reading about them. But it's butt talk. Very sophisticated butt talk with its own lexicon. Is that what you'd say, vocabulary?
So apparently you've inherited some things from your dad.
I think I have. And that's nature. That is not nurture.
And yeah. we could explore that further.
We can, actually, with the first topic you were mentioning.
Well, maybe we can. But this topic is now closed.
Yep.
We're back on the rule of three. Two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each. The perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. We're going to be talking about the passing of the Helter Skelter era. The closing, the final chapter in the Helter Skelter era in the next segment. However, in this segment, something that has been in the news lately is the... Donald Trump he's actually wavering. He said that he was going to drop the ban on the importation of elephant parts.
That's right.
And then there was such outrage that he said, okay, I will not drop the ban on the importation of elephant parts. And then I just read just about 10 minutes ago, he'll have a decision in 2 weeks what he's going to do about elephant parts. So all I can think of is that maybe Don Jr. bagged himself an elephant and he's trying to figure out a loophole.
Into the country and get his profits.
He wants that umbrella stand.
You need that in the Trump Tower. You need an elephant foot umbrella stand or stool or whatever you would want.
My opinion is that if you want an animal to never be endangered, what you need to do is have your society develop a taste for it.
That's actually true. No, there's math to support that if you eat stuff, it becomes very abundant.
Right. Cows and chickens will never become extinct. Pigs will never become extinct because they are delicious.
Yeah.
They are bred to be dumb, ugly, and delicious. And for that reason, they'll never go extinct.
But they're also easy to kill and very docile. That's part of it. And elephants, on the other hand, very much different in that respect.
That's why it's considered a sport. Yeah.
If they were more cooperative, there would be more of them, is what I'm saying. It's their problem. They have a bad attitude. They don't just come on over and let us eat you. No, it's interesting what you bring up. If you, I just read this recently. If you weigh the weight of humans on Earth right now is 300 million tons of humans. And then the domesticated animals.
Most of it in Wisconsin.
Yeah. We're not going to parse it down to in America, let's be honest. Per capita, we're hogging that up.
Sure.
But 300
well, actually,
million.
Actually, no. The fattest.
Mississippi,
people
wasn't
in
it?
The world.
Where?
No, the fattest country in the world.
What?
Mexico.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I did not know.
You know
that.
which is kind of ironic. You know, it makes sense because the ones in shape are Americans now.
Oh. Well, not all the time. That's not true. I fly enough to know that it is. You never know what you're going to sit. You know who you're going to share your seat. But anyway, what I was going to say: 300 million tons of America are humans, and then 700 million tons of that animal mass are the animals we eat, domesticated animals. And guess how many million tons there are of all the other wild animals on Earth? 100 million tons. That's it. So us and the stuff we eat outnumber the other living mass 10 to 1. Now, we're not counting insects, but we're talking mammals. It's an amazing thought.
We're talking mammals, not reptiles, fish, no?
No, fish, also fish and reptiles, yes, stuff we eat. In other words, if you take wild, larger mammals, I don't know if they're counting mice. I don't know if they included mice and rats.
Oh, my God. I pulled a ton out of my garage this fall.
Oh, but you don't eat them. They seem
no,
to do
I don't.
Well.
No, I don't. And there's a fox. We have a fox in the neighborhood, and every time I see him, it's like, you know, if you were doing your job,
I wouldn't have them doing.
I wouldn't be wasting all this damn food.
But it's you are. You're wasting fox food. But what's amazing to me is how disproportionate that is. I mean, if you go back, now we're into soft sciences, but if you go back a few thousand years, wow, that was a lot different. So I think you're absolutely right. If you start eating something, if it's delicious and docile, then it is going to be, there's going to be a ton of them.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's because it now has a value. The reason why elephants are endangered is because it's illegal, because ivory trade is illegal. So when you make something illegal like that, all you do is increase the value. You know, it's basically what you want. If you want people to stop smuggling ivory, you want to make ivory legal so that the Chinese will develop these huge elephant farms. It's, you know, where they remove the tusks and then ship the elephants off to circuses or wherever.
Slaughterhouses.
But yeah, it does.
A dystopian. I don't know if I can jump on board with this.
But then what happens is when somebody says, look at this, I've got an ivory statue. It's like, oh, that looks like Chinese crap.
Yeah, and then once
and then suddenly there's no value to ivory. It's not precious. It's not something that billionaires search. It's not something that'll make a poacher wealthy. Now it's Chinese crap that nobody wants.
Well, unless they can get the certified wild ivory with the hang tag, because you know that'll happen.
Because of the chips on it.
Smell that. That is African ivory, they would say. That is authentic Asian ivory. This isn't some farm ivory. But I think I guess what I'm saying is I do see a need for conservation. It's like sometimes on these science topics, we're in the middle of a big mass extinction. So I get them being concerned on that end. But I think what swung Trump wasn't numbers. I don't think it was numbers or a mass extinction or a concern for elephants. It was all of his supporters who came out against it. I read an article from a liberal newspaper that showed all the tweets from his conservative supporters. You know, oh, no, Trump is doing this horrible thing. And then he switched. He listens to a certain base, I think, and he responds very much to mass media. And he's a media star. I think that's what runs him, is ratings to this day, social media ratings. And when he had a bunch of negative tweets from Gisele Bündchen, I mean, he's a good friend with Tom Brady, and Gisele came out against it and all angry, and there's a bunch of them. So I think that's what swung him around.
It's which is good and bad in a way. In a way, it's good that actually that you do have a person in an important office that is not inflexible.
Yeah.
I think it's the bad part is that that populism, I think, is not a good idea, because the popular opinion is not always the right opinion.
No, it's not. You're right.
As history has proven more than once.
Many times. But on this one, too, I think they were advocating legalized hunting there so that they said they could finance the approach you're talking about, which was if we have them hunted, we can take those profits and use them to regulate and protect more.
I have a relative that's that has done big game hunting.
Oh, yeah.
And she actually tells me stories about her trips to Africa, and that actually the village they need that for these villages where the big game hunting goes on. That's their economy. B, that's their food source.
Yeah.
She brought home a zebra rug. She wanted a zebra rug because she had a room that it would be perfect in.
Mm.
it sounds cold, and it actually didn't go well. Maybe I'll talk about it later because we're rapidly approaching the end of the segment. But she said the meat all went. You know, she had a zebra steak. So she did. But then the meat all went to the people. I mean, that's their food source. And she said, and this is kind of disgusting. Alert if you're having breakfast. She said that the gut pile.
Oh, yeah.
That there were people there saying, "Can we have that?" And she was like, Well, sure.
And she said, well, for $5.
No,
give that away.
But that's the thing. That's the thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, right now it's hunting season, and yeah. right now hunters are just burying that. But yeah. she said it was like she had given this guy the greatest gift that yeah. he had received in a long time.
Well, this comes back. I know we have to finish, but this comes back to Laszlo's pyramid again. If you're still working on food and shelter on that pyramid, you don't have time to worry about other higher pyramid things like the environment. I mean, it's the way when you're starving to death, you're not as worried about mass extinctions and so forth. That being said, I think elephant farm acreage would be out of control. I don't think that's a practical approach.
But one thing we try to keep in control is the 10-minute rule.
Yep.
And on the final segment of the Rule of Three, if you pick up the paper this morning, there's no way you can miss it. One of the most infamous cult leader, maybe perhaps the longest living cult leader, because life expectancies of cult leaders are not that long.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah,
Charles Manson died of natural causes last night.
Just seems wrong. If anybody should die of unnatural causes, it should have been him, in my opinion.
And actually, he now has only 8 life sentences left.
Does he? Can we hand those out to other people? Because I wouldn't mind doing that. Are those transferable?
And Charles Manson, he has almost been an iconic cult leader because for some reason he would have a parole hearing about every 3-4 years. So we'd get to see what new things he's added to his forehead, what state his beard was in, how his hair was looking.
Yeah, just
if his eyes if they had fixed that crossed eye is.
And he didn't. He never changed his look, except when he tried to repair the X. You know, people repair tattoos, and he repaired his from an X into a swastika. Brilliant, brilliant idea. I mean, if he would have expanded that to like a tic-tac-toe grid, he stands a better chance of making parole. But as long as
maybe an algebra formula. He could have done an algebra for you. He could have squared it.
He could have turned it into something that gets you past the parole board. But as long as you have that right between your eyes.
X squared plus Y squared. I'm now a Pythagorean.
Yeah, that's just up one side of one of your cock eyes. That's just like, I don't trust this guy. I don't know what it is. The fact that he has a swastika and he still embraces evil and violence, I don't know if I like that.
Yeah. It's every parole hearing. It's if there was anybody's doubt in anybody's mind that he was in the right place, his parole hearing certainly reinforced that.
Yeah, like, wow.
It's astounding to me that someone who is so obviously crazy,
yeah,
was able to get so many chicks.
I know that always makes the rest of men who can't get women just like reconsider the good guy approach, you know.
Well, that's the trouble. You're too nice of a guy.
Yeah. I got great chick, man, but it wasn't by being a totally good guy, I guess. I don't know. Is that wild? He did. He got a lady that wanted to marry him while he was in there.
Yeah, while he was in there. But I mean, while he was out, it was holy cow. He had like a dozen.
Wow.
Which is something that's always amazed me is that everybody who claims that they're hearing the voice of God, the first thing God seems to tell them is you want to surround yourself with a lot of young girls.
No. Why would you say that to a Mormon? Why would you bring that up to a Mormon? You first, the cult leader, you were baiting me with the cult leader thing.
No, and then surround
with women. They die young. Joseph Smith died when he was, what was he, 33? Yeah. And he had
how many wives?
I forget the exact number. He had roughly quite a few. At first on the sly, kind of on the side. Uh-huh. And then, yeah. He died young, like you say, and very charismatic.
And happy. With a big smile, on his face.
He was. I don't know. He fell out of it. Probably a look of oh no on his face. I don't.
There's a joke about Mark Twain, and I don't know if it was Joseph Smith he met or one of the other fathers of the church, and saying there's no way that you can handle that many women. So they placed a bet, he went around from room to room, and got to 12 rooms, and he's going to the 13th room, and he just kind of sits down, and he goes, I can't do it, and Mark Twain says, well, you know, that's okay, that's you did more than most men could, and he said, yeah, but you don't understand, Mark, I was fine this morning.
Not now.
I was not baiting you. I was thinking more David Koresh
actual cult leaders. I mean, those were real. Well, we won't get into how you define cult, but yeah, Koresh.
Well, no, that's actually why I wanted to bring it up. Is how do you define cult? Because most religions, most established religions, started as cults.
Absolutely. It's just that their base meme wasn't self-destructive. I think that's usually fine with cults like Koresh or David Jones. The meme, that their truth, their kind of story that they're going to run on, bumps into reality, and then, you know, everybody drinks Kool-Aid or buys matching sneakers or whatever they do, and it's over.
In the New Testament, Christ, I think it was Christ, said, how will we know? I think it was him that warned about false prophets in the future. Yeah. And they said, how will we tell if the prophet is false? I can't remember what he said. Was it by their fruits?
By their fruits ye shall know them? That's what we always quoted.
There you go. Exactly right.
How did it turn out? By the way,
true prophets do not carve swastikas on their forehead
and tell you to go kill people.
Surround themselves with young girls in robes and tell them to kill people. Yes.
Yeah.
That is the incorrect fruit.
Yeah.
And if that fruit actually is just an artificial flavoring with sugar.
Cyanide, then it's a bad fruit.
Yeah, stay away, not a prophet.
Yeah.
So what would the fruit of Scientology be?
I have no idea. That's a good point. I know the fruit of Mormonism, and there's a lot of good stuff that they do. I know there's some things that I think they did that were not good, that are still harmful. But they do some harm, but they do a lot of good, too. So that's true of all religion. All religion is going to have a mixed effect. It's bound to.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily the religion. It's the interpretation is that people are not – have a hard time separating the fruit. It's like, okay, this is good fruit from this. This is bad fruit. It's preserving books through the ages was one of the good fruits of the Catholic Church. Spanish Inquisition, bad fruit.
Yeah, St. Bartholomew's Massacre, probably not a good. That was a bad one. there's things happen. We get very upset when our cult's answers don't match your cult's answers or your religion's. But the difference between a religion and a cult is something. I mean, I bumped into that a lot as a Mormon when I was a Mormon missionary. I got so fed up with other Christian religions. You know, well, you're not Christian. You're a cult. Just constantly. That's what they would call us.
Yeah.
Even,
oh, sure.
though, even though their little like strip mall church has like 80 members, and at that time there's 6 million Mormons in the world, you know. Like, well, you do understand. And when you look at what they were doing, we were both probably equally at that time in history, equally racist and homophobic. We're both the same kind of stuff going on in our culture, sure, and religion. But we were the cult because we weren't – we were new, I guess. We're weird.
Well, I'm Catholic. I'm Catholic, so the Protestants call me a cult too, even though, yeah, you know, hello, I was here before you.
Yep. You know, so you're really old cult then. Mormonism used to call
– I'm kind of the original. You're the sequel, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Mormonism called you guys – when I was growing up, that was the great and abominable church, was the Catholic Church. That was, sure, in the doctrine, yeah.
Sure. And what? In one point, it absolutely was.
Yeah. Yeah. By today's standards, definitely. Pretty vicious. So back to Manson. I was reading about that, and one of his victims, I didn't know, Abigail Folger, heiress to the Folgers coffee.
Was she there with Sharon Tate, or was that a separate incident?
She was
incident?
There with Sharon Tate. And then there was some teenager who walks in who no one ever – I can't even remember his name. Poor teenager.
Huh. Anyway, yeah. I wish we could memorialize it more, but the victim's not the perp. But we're out of time.
Oh,
that's
no.
It. That's we are done for the week. That's the rule of three. You can find all the episodes on iTunes or timslegel.com. Follow me on Twitter at Tim Slegel. Tim Slegel Comedy on Facebook, or
you can follow me if you want, Bent Washburn. On Facebook. I don't even know. I just look up Bent Washburn. There's no other ones. I think I'm the only.
Getbent.com? Is that a website?
Getbent.com, and you spell Bent, B-E-N-G-T, B-E-N-G-T. And if you put Washburn after B-E-N-G-T, my Twitter comes up, my Facebook, my Instagram, all that.
It's nice having strange names. I don't know. I'm much higher in the Google search than comics named John Smith.
I was way up on when you go to Bent, B-E-N-G-T, when you Googled that for a while, I was like number two. I was number two.
Wow. But Bent number two.
Bent two. It's almost. But then a couple of famous Swedes and this Bent Holmstrom got a Nobel Prize for chemistry. And I dropped in.
Yeah.
I'm not relevant anymore.
And we'll see you next week.
Yeah.